Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff. It's also the voice of the underdog. It's a place where, you know, we get into things going on in the news and the culture. And a quick disclaimer, because we've been away for a little while, so I just want to remind folks who have forgotten, or maybe folks who are new to the show, just a quick disclaimer. This ain't CNN. Nope, it's not. This ain't the Washington Post. Definitely ain't Fox News. It ain't Hot 97. And not that there's anything wrong with those places, but they cover the news and culture. And here at the Gregory Neesmith Show, though, we get personal about it. And we do it from all the unangles, trying to figure out how we keep our swagger in today's society and culture. And we do it from the unangles, the unavoidable, the unbelievable, the unjust, the unsaid. You get it by now, underdog stuff. And as always, to take you on that journey each week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, underdog advocate, certified coach, published author, investor, and founder of Underdog Stuff. And, you know, we just out here trying to figure out how we get underdogs the access to the people and the resources they need on their come-ups and their comebacks. And as always, today's show will have a couple things in it. We'll have the unavoidable news, a swagger back commandment or two, the under the week, and a special underdog spotlight. With that, I do want to let you know, we're going to go through the show like we normally do, but we have a special guest that's going to join later in the show. And that special guest is our underdog spotlight of the week, and it is Vivian Mandela. And she has been around construction for the past 20-something years, and her passions include construction, social justice, housing, and livable wages. And one of her most important passions is her three amazing kids. And she leads a nonprofit called CMC Workforce, which is a long-term education and apprenticeship program. CMC Workforce helps everyone who comes to them, regardless of their past. And they partner with a lot of community-based organizations that focus on reentry. And reentry can be folks who are military vets, can be folks who were previously homeless, folks who've been previously incarcerated. She is an underdog advocate, and she is this week's underdog spotlight. And we'll have her here in studio to talk about what she's up to and also how you and I can get involved in helping some underdogs out there in New York City. With that, today's episode, I didn't even tell you what today's episode is. It's episode 91, and the title of today's episode is called Two Lies and Maybe One Truth. Two Lies and Maybe One Truth. Full disclosure, I might have been a little over the top with the title this week, but hey, I'm rolling with it. And we'll discuss these three topics, and you'll have to let me know which two feel false and which one feels like a toss-up. And those three things are: MC Hammer was a one-hit wonder.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Let me know. MC Hammer was a one-hit wonder. Donald Trump has had just as good of a first 2 years as President Obama did. And number three, the golden rule, right? Treat people how you want to be treated. Let me know. Two lies and maybe one truth. That's a little over the top. But two of those statements are false, and one of them might be a toss-up. We'll talk about it in the unavoidable news segment. Then we got the under the week, and that is around Florida got it right. They did. Florida voters got it right. And I know you're probably thinking, what do you mean, Greg? You were for Andrew Gillum. What do you mean he didn't win the race? What do you mean Florida voters got it right? I'll explain, and it'll tie to underdog spotlight of the week. It'll all make sense before we get out of here. Let's get into today's topic. Two of these statements are false, and one of them is a toss-up. First statement, MC Hammer was a one-hit wonder. Let me know, is that true, false, toss-up? Donald Trump had just as good of the first 2 years as President Obama's first 2 years. And last but not least, false or toss up, treat people how you want to be treated. I think I want to start with the one that ties most to the unavoidable news, which is elections happen. I used to think election night was a night, a Tuesday, the first one in November. And then by the time I go to bed and maybe the next day, election's over, you know, all the results. But that wasn't the case this year. I think election night should be renamed to election month. I think literally, if you're listening to this live or the podcast during the week, they may still be counting votes in California. I think only in the past few days did they call the elections in Florida, in Georgia, and a few other places. I just don't understand why we take so long to do this. But with that, there's been a lot of talk about there was a blue wave. And if you lean to the left, you were probably excited. Even though some of the more popular candidates, like Beto O'Rourke and Stacey Abrams and Andrew Gillum, unfortunately did not win their contest in their respective states of Florida, Georgia, and Texas. But, you know, folks said it was a blue wave. I believe the Democrats picked up about 6 or 7 governor seats from Republicans. I believe it looks like Democrats are going to get somewhere between, let's call it 35 to the low 40s in terms of new seats in the House of Representatives. And I think they didn't really pick up much in the Senate, may have actually had a net gain of a loss of one, or maybe said differently, the Republicans picked up one seat in the Senate. And so, you know, people said that's a blue wave and that another example that Donald Trump is a terrible president. Another example that Donald Trump isn't as good as Obama. Remember this?
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America. There is not a black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's the United States of America. The pundits like to slice and dice our country into red states and blue states. Red states for Republicans, blue states for Democrats. But I've got news for them too. We worship an awesome God in the blue states. And we don't like federal agents poking around in our libraries in the red states. We coach Little League in the blue states. And yes, we've got some gay friends in the red states. There are patriots who opposed the war in Iraq, and there are patriots who supported the war in Iraq. We are one people, all of us pledging allegiance to the Stars and Stripes, all of us defending the United States of America.
President? Number 44, Barack Obama. That was him, I think, around the time when he was just about to get into office and was letting us know that he was change we could believe in. We weren't going to be a red America or blue America. We're going to be one American. That faded away pretty quickly, and some would say it's definitely gone by now. But if I said to you Donald Trump had just as good as the first 2 years in office as Obama, a lot of you, especially those who live in this part of the country, or a lot of my friends who may lean to the left, would say, Gregory, you gotta be kidding me. That's definitely false. That's not a toss-up. I don't like Trump. People don't like Trump. He's a disgrace. He's not presidential. People have feelings about Donald Trump. I have feelings. I may not like him. And then I may like Obama. And that's likely going to impact my answer to the question of, just if someone asked me, did Trump have just as good as the first 2 years as Obama? And just to go down a trip down memory lane, I'm not talking about Obama's overall presidency. I'm just talking about first 2 years or first 2 years. And in Obama's first 2 years, he passed the stimulus package because there was a lot of drama going on with the economy, the Great Recession. During that time, he bailed out the auto companies, worked with Congress to pass the Affordable Care Act, and made some major changes to student loan programs. And guess what? When he got to his midterm elections, guess what happened? Democrats lost 60 seats, lost 10 governorships, and 6 Senate seats. Just objectively speaking, I'm not on my Tavis Smiley and Cornel West here. That's not my come from. I'm not trying to make a living off of just critiquing Barack Obama like those two did. And then I haven't seen them recently. I guess they haven't noticed that Donald Trump's in office. They seem to have nothing to say, but that's an aside and I won't go after them right in this moment. But objectively, is it really totally clear cut that Obama had a better first 2 years than Trump? At the time of the midterms, both of them had favorability ratings in the 40s. Trump may have just been hit by a blue wave, but I mean, if I look at the numbers, Obama got hit by a tsunami, 60 seats lost in the House, 10 governorships, 6 Senate seats. And then you might say, oh, but look at the legislation, the signature legislation that Obama passed, Affordable Care Act, which people hated it when it was called Obamacare. Then they liked it when it was Affordable Care Act, and then they hated it, and then now people like it again. But all that being said, it was unpopular. And then fast forward to Trump, his signature legislation, tax bill. Some would say tilted towards helping those who make a lot of money and those and businesses, passed and unpopular. I'm just saying that when I look at it objectively, it's not necessarily a false statement that Trump had just as good of the first 2 years as Obama. They both bring out the racists in their own way. Obviously, I think some Americans weren't able to handle having the first brother in office. I'm in the United States. And we've clearly seen that, unfortunately, Trump brings out the racists in a way that's definitely different and definitely more destructive, talking about there's very fine people on both sides. So I don't know. Let me know. Underdogs, is it a toss-up or is it false? All right, enough about Obama and Trump for right now. I'll get back to them in a second. The other topic was MC Hammer one-hit wonder or not? And for me, I just remember MC Hammer with a really big hit called You Can't Touch This. And I also remember he seemed to blow up real quick and unfortunately take a quick fall, overspending, taking care of everybody on this tour. And I just remember him being a rocket ship that went up and a rocket ship went down. That's just my memory of him. But it turns out that upon further review, MC Hammer as a one-hit wonder is false. And it's false because, according to Billboard, MC Hammer had 10, count them, 10 singles that made the Billboard Top 100 from the years 1990 to 1994. Definitely not a one-hit wonder. That one was false. Treat people how you want to be treated. False or a toss-up? It's actually false. And what I mean by that, I mean, it's false because it sounds good. Treat people how you want to be treated. But imagine if someone was cooking you dinner every night. Would you want them to make the food that they like, how they want to eat? Or would you want them to make the food that you like, how you want to eat? Anybody ever heard of the five love languages? Man, this got me, and it's probably gotten you in a couple of relationships too. Are you showing your significant other the love how you want to be loved? Are you showing them the love on how they want to be loved? See, it's one of those things in our culture that we throw around and we say, treat people how I want to be treated, but it's false. It's normally more effective and best to treat people how they want to be treated, which in turn would mean you'd be getting treated how you want to be treated. And so, yes, that means that the toss-up turned out to be that Trump may have just had just as good of a first 2 years as Obama. Now, why do I bring up these obscure three topics in an episode called Two Lies and Maybe One Truth, which I said, it's an over-the-top title, but think of it more as two things are false, one may be a toss-up. I bring it up because, you know, it's all fun and games to talk about MC Hammer, Donald Trump, Obama, how people want to be treated. But it ain't fun and games when it's about your job and whether or not there's a debate of, are you doing a good job, great job, bad job or not? Then all of a sudden, this ain't so fun and games when people are going off their memory. Like, I think MC Hammer was a one-hit wonder. I think you did good at your job so far this year. Or it's not fun and games when the feedback is driven by the fact that, yeah, Obama definitely had a better first 2 years than Trump because I don't like Trump. I don't think you want to have your performance at your job rated on someone's memory or someone's liking or disliking of you. And you definitely don't want it based on just cultural norms that may not even be true, like treating people how you want to be treated when it's really treat people how they want to be treated. So with that, unavoidable news is the elections are somewhat over. And just know, depending on who you ask, And what the criteria is, the answers to certain questions may be different than just based on your memories or your feelings or even some cultural norms that are outdated. And so before we get out of here on this unavoidable news topic of the week, I want to bring in just a bit of a swagger back commandment, which is how do we deal with making sure we're on the same page when we're talking about something or someone's or our own performance in something? And I would say there's three things to always consider. Whose opinion is going to matter? So if we're using the work example, your performance isn't dictated solely by peers or by some random person who works in a department that you don't work in. The sole opinion that matters the most is your manager's. And it's good to know whose opinion counts because it could impact the answer to the question. Because if I ask some Republican, is Trump just as good as Obama? Most of the Republicans would say, yeah, probably even better. But I ask Democrats, it would be the opposite answer. So know who you're going to be asking the question to. Also, what's the criteria going to be? In the MC Hammer example, it's bad criteria if the criteria is somebody's memory. It should be what you aligned on is what are the criteria of success. If we're using the Obama example and Trump, is the criteria of success their policy leadership? How well they're doing when it comes to foreign policy, crisis management, what their presidential appointments look like, how well the economy's doing. Make sure you know what's the criteria going to be. And then lastly, know when you're going to check in with that person or those parties so that you won't be caught up in some falses and some toss-ups. You actually know what the real deal is. Unbelievable. And the under the week is Florida voters got it right. They did. And you're like, Gregory, no, they didn't. DeSantis won and beat Andrew Gillum. And if you don't know, that was a very contested race for governor. And this dude here, DeSantis, who some said used some very inflammatory language and how he described and talked about Andrew Gillum. I think folks may remember this clip during the campaign.
Well, look, I mean, this is Florida elections are always competitive. And, you know, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think he's got huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee. You know, he is an articulate spokesman for those far left views, and he's a charismatic candidate. And, you know, I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea. But I mean, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda.
Monkey things up. Andrew. There's that coded language talking about don't monkey things up. I think he called Andrew Gillum articulate on top of that. When's the last time you heard someone go, man, that Joe Biden, he's articulate. That Bill Clinton sure can string a sentence together. Man, oh man, Elizabeth Warren, when she runs for president, she's going to be so articulate. Sometimes it just seems that the brothers and sisters get that type of language. With that said, though, Andrew Gillum fought back. I haven't been on the air in a couple weeks, so I just want to play this clip because I think it's one of the all-time great clips inside of a debate in politics. And bear with me. I'm going to get to the fact that the Florida voters did get it right. And I'll explain what the it is in a second, but let's just hear this clip from Andrew Gillum, who unfortunately a few days ago conceded the race in the Florida governorship, but he will return to continue to be mayor of Tallahassee. And I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of Andrew Gillum, but this was him giving his thoughts on DeSantis.
Hey, my grandmother used to say, a hit dog will holler. And it hollered through this room. Mr. DeSantis has spoken. Hey, first of all, he's got neo-Nazis helping him out in the state. He has spoken at racist conferences. He's accepted a contribution and would not return it from someone who referred to the former president of the United States as a Muslim, N-I-G-G-E-R. When asked to return that money, he said no. He's using that money to now fund negative ads. Now, I'm not calling Mr. DeSantis a racist. I'm simply saying the racists believe he's a racist.
Yo. That might be one of the most classic lines about attacking an opponent when it comes to race without calling them a racist, shout out to Andrew Gillum. And if someone ever asks me again if Donald Trump is racist, I think I might use that line to go, I'm not calling Donald Trump a racist. I just think that the, you know, racists think he's racist. With that, I digress, though. The under the week, the unbelievable, the what Florida voters got right. They got right an amendment that they had on the ballots, which was to vote should folks who've previously been incarcerated serve their time, should they be able to vote in Florida. And currently Florida, I believe, is one of only two states that had a law that said once you've been incarcerated for a felony charge, you lose your right to vote for life. For life. And I believe Kentucky and there's one other state that have this same law on the bills. And it's crazy, right? Because most often the law prevents people behind bars from voting, and it prohibits some folks who are still on parole as well. But Florida bans people for life, and only Kentucky and Iowa are the two other states that do this. Now, in the opposite direction, you have states like Maine and Vermont that let people vote regardless of their criminal record, meaning that people can vote even if they're still in prison at the moment. And all of this stuff is an unfortunate legacy that comes from the 14th Amendment, which states that the government can take away our right to vote due to participation in rebellion or other crimes, which is rough, right? Because if you're an underdog that is a person of color, oftentimes you are incarcerated. We are incarcerated at a rate greater than the rest of the population. And then that leads to this path of potentially not being a full citizen, not being able to vote and participate in our democracy. And it just has an unraveling effect. But I got good news. State of Florida passed Amendment 4, which gives folks who've been previously incarcerated with a felony offense the right to vote once they've completed their sentence. It's a big freaking deal. About a million something Floridians, I think they're called Floridians, will be able to vote. And here's a little background on it.
In Florida, 10% of the population has had their right to vote taken away. That's 1.7 million people who can't vote because they have a felony conviction. Florida is one of four states where felons lose their right to vote for life. People in poorer communities in cities like Miami have been disproportionately affected. Amendment 4. It took more than 750,000 signatures just to get it on the ballot. If it passes, it would restore voting rights to most felons in Florida, those who haven't committed murder or a sexual offense.
Shout out to Florida. They got it right. And for the bill to have passed, Florida voters had to get the yeses had to be over 60% of those who voted, and 64% of Floridians said, yo, the folks have the right to vote back who served their time. And I'm proud of Florida. It seems in politics we can agree on a lot of things and can't get 64% of people to agree on almost anything when there's a Republican versus Democrat. And while I'm not in favor of DeSantis over Gillum, I am proud of the bipartisan, I'll call it, vote by the citizens of Florida that have now given folks back their right to vote. And it's a big deal. I mean, I saw a stat that said if the prison population of America, which is somewhere north of 2 million people, was its own city, it'd be the 10th largest city in our country. That's how many people are behind bars. That's how many folks who now have served their time. Folks will be out. And at least if you're in Florida, you now have the right to vote. And it's a big deal. And I'm all for it. With that, the under the week somewhat relates to underdog spotlight. And while I know mass incarceration is on your mind, it's on my mind, it's a lot of challenges that come with it, I'm oftentimes left with like, well, what can I do? What can you do about it? And there's stuff that needs to be done on the policing side and the criminal justice reform side, but there's also the now, what to do with folks who are reentering society. And there's folks who reenter as previously incarcerated. There's folks who reenter who've been previously homeless. There's people who reenter who've been previously in part of the military. And the cool thing is our underdog spotlight of the week, Miss Vivian Mandela, is about to join the show. And she's going to talk about some of the work that her nonprofit does about long-term education and apprentice programs that helps everyone who comes to them, regardless of their past, be able to make a new future. And she partners with a lot of community-based organizations to do that. I'm clearly rusty. I haven't been in the studio in a little while. I'm not picking up the phones properly. I'm cutting people off. Shame on me. But I think I've done it right. Do we have Deborah on the phone line?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Do you see how rusty I am? I just hung up the phone. I didn't turn the volume back on.
That's okay.
It is good to hear your voice. Yes, this is my first time back in 2 months.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I caught you.
Yes, you did.
And I just said try. Just see whether or not the show was on.
Hey.
So see, I was lucky.
No,
listen.
You got that good vibe and good energy.
Yeah, I didn't know until you started talking about people being able to come out and, you know, start a career and stuff like that. But you know what I found really interesting? I just had to say this. Maybe it's not part of the show. But, you know, with the fires and everything out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the prisoners putting out fires along with the firemen.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, it's just really a shame that, you know, when people try to apply who haven't even been in prison, you know, they don't even want them in there. And yet they'll have you risk your life to put out a fire. So, you know, I think that, you know, fire people, even in the fire department, they should take stock of that, because there are a lot of people out here that know how to do just what they do, and they were more than willing to have them come out there and help them.
Yeah, and I saw that story too, and it's...
Yeah, and it's still burning, and they're still out there.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? But they want to hang nooses when you get a position. So I think, you know, people should be made, you know, you should... They don't forget. The people that do this, they don't forget. But it should be made known. You know, like, now we're good enough to do it for a dollar a day.
Yeah, and actually, Deborah, I'm also, I appreciate that comment. I'm also going to let Vivian weigh in, who's here today as our underlock spotlight, to talk about some of the work that she does with folks who've been previously incarcerated, ex-military folks, previously homeless.
I'm so glad you're back.
Hey, I'm glad to be back and glad to hear your voice.
Yes.
And so
take
care too. So we will address your comments too. And I'm just happy to hear you, and I'll be back again next week.
Okay.
All right, now that's Deborah from Manhattan, okay. Everybody. One of our favorite underdogs. So actually, with that, I'm gonna do a quick introduction of our special guest, Miss Vivian Mandela, who is who's been around in construction for the past 20 years, and her passions include construction, social justice, housing, and livable wage reform. And her biggest passions include her three amazing kids. And she is the founder of CMC Workforce, which is a long-term education and training based apprenticeship program. And CMC Workforce works with everybody, regardless of their past.
So our biggest population that we serve are women and men coming back from being previously incarcerated. So just by happenstance, we don't need any, our vetting is a little different than normal vetting. The guys don't need GEDs or diplomas or anything like that. They just need to want to dig deep and start a career in construction. So that takes a special person. So our vetting, we start the process a little differently than most. So
very cool. And we'll get into some of that vetting process. Before we dive into some of what you do, I do want to just get your quick thoughts on both something our caller Deborah brought up.
Right.
And the honor of the week, which that Florida actually voted to allow folks who've been previously incarcerated with felony offenses get their right to vote back if they've served their time.
Right.
Which they were only one of the three states. It's amazing that there's still three states that would do that, strip folks' right to vote away from them for life. And then also talk about the wildfires and folks who are out there working for a dollar. Just your thoughts on both of those topics.
So the men and women that are out working for a dollar is actually spotlighted in California because of the high risk that's involved, but it's actually something that we do in the state also. When guys, you'll drive by them or ride the train or subway by them, they're picking up garbage by the side of the road. Every state does that. Every state has a policy where they use people that have been, that are in prisons for public, quote unquote, public service or jobs that are on the lowest rung These guys get paid as little as 6 cents for some of the work that they do, all the way up to a dollar. A lot of the guys that come to us, and when I say guys, I mean guys and gals. So they come to us with a lot of experience, specifically in construction too, because they build the prisons, they clean the prisons, they make the soap for the prisons, and so none of that, if you're dealing with that population, is shocking to me.
No, it's not. But knowing that one of your passions is a livable wage, I know that you would are at odds.
Yes.
And you agree with Deborah that folks out there putting their lives on the line, doing good work, and then getting paid a dollar for it is unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable for them to be forced to do anything at that point also, because they are serving we need to separate worth with mistakes that are made or being in prison. So the morality. Ooh,
say that one more time.
Yeah. The human worth and morality, and it gets really messy because everybody lays all kinds of stuff on top of something that usually is a moment in someone's life. So we all make bad choices at different varying points of our lives. Some of us are luckier than others on the outcomes of those. Some of us get...
Hey, underdogs, raise your hand if you have made a bad choice at some point. I might even made a few this weekend, and I will raise my hand to that. With that, you know, we talk underdog stuff here, and I always like to ask every person that comes on, especially during the underdog spotlight, when I say the word underdog to you, what comes to mind?
Oh, my people. So that's everybody that I'm in and around. So people that struggle, they have a path, they're trying to find it, and they're going to get it. They're going to get there. They're just not giving up. They're just going to keep fighting and getting there and striving. And you know, everybody makes mistakes. You learn from those and you move forward in a way that's better informed than you were before. And again, like, it's about taking the morality away from, or the judgment, I guess is a better word for it, for choices that are made that might not be the best, but you do the best you can.
No, I hear you on that. And I wish there was more acceptance of our humanity. And
that's good.
And humanity. The fact that we get to rediscover ourselves again and again,
yes.
And have our come ups and comebacks. With that, you could be doing anything in the world,
yes.
Right? You also have three amazing kids. Life is good for you.
Yes.
Why do you spend your time
doing what I do?
Doing what you do. Some would say, like, it's an uphill battle, it's daunting.
It is.
And like, why are you working with underdogs out there, especially those who are trying to re-enter society and get their swagger back, so to speak?
Because it wasn't always as awesome as it is right now. And regardless of who you are, unless you're part of the 1% who are handed everything, you've had struggle. I've had struggle. It looks different than your struggle. But it's still, you know, I know what it feels like to feel alone. I know which is the worst feeling. I don't care where you come from. And I feel like everybody needs a fair shake. And if I have something to contribute that could help guide, that's really all I'm doing. I'm showing people how to go from point A to point B. They have to want it enough to actually go through the motions and do it. But all I am here doing is showing people how to get there. So that's my job.
Well, I love the modesty of, like, that's just all you're doing, but what you're doing is a big deal. And you talk about helping get people from point A to point B.
Right.
When folks come to you, regardless of their past, and they want to participate in the programs and stuff that you have going on at CMC Workforce.
Right.
What happens? What are you helping them get from point A to point B with?
So because my background is in construction, and I've been in ownership, and I've been in the management side of it for a long time, I know the different levels. So all I did was, when I started thinking about how I could help and get involved in a bigger, better way, construction's what I know. So construction's what I started with. You start with what you know, and you use the tools that you have. So that's where we started. And really the whole point of because we have a lot of guys in construction
and gals
sorry, when I say guys I mean gals too, which is very exciting for me. We have a lot of people at the lowest rung and have no idea how to move forward. I'm of the age group that I remember when there was shop class in high school and the guys out in the shop messing with cars and building things.
Uh-oh, I do too. That must mean we might be in the same age group. People are like, shop? What did they taught you how to go shopping? There's an Amazon app that you had in class? No, we were, we could have killed somebody.
Build with saws things with your eyes? Yes, for real. So they did away with that right after we graduated from high school in when the dinosaurs roamed, I guess. So what that did to the construction industry was actually pretty horrific. And they've been talking about it for the last 15 years is that there's been a vacancy in, first it was a vacancy in the bottom rung with laborers. Now it's a vacancy in skilled labor. And that's really, really bad because you've got a lot of people who want to do construction. But they don't know how to get from point A to point B. So that's where we come in. So not only are we a vehicle for anyone who wants to be in construction, but we don't delineate. Everybody's in there this together, you know. So you're judged on the work that you do from the entry point into our program.
I love it. It reminds me of the approach, which I know a lot of people are taking, all called open hiring, where folks can come in, and if they're willing to work and learn, then they got the job. And your program is open admission, so to speak. It is.
We're tough, though. We've got a little bit of a reputation for being a little tough, which is in construction is good. It's a tough industry. You've got to be able to show up when you say you're going to show up. So our pillars are integrity, professionalism, and safety, and we really hammer that home from the very beginning, and the integrity piece is huge. So what we've discovered, though, which is very exciting to me and I love, is that everybody that comes through our program, we're part of a larger community. Mm-hmm. So we really feel that that's the biggest part and parcel of our program is the construction. It's trades and skill building, and you're learning on the job, and you've got classroom work and all of that kind of stuff, and that's very, very good. But it's also part of a larger community, so our guys and gals actually end up talking to each other. We have a Facebook page that's private that everybody speaks to each other on. We're having our holiday party, so it's really, and I think that's part of our biggest success, is that it's about community. It's about building people up, and it's not just about the job. The job is the backbone, but
they get a job.
Of course. What's the point?
No, I just got it. I want folks to know, like, they get a community, they get support, but they get actual certification and skills to go get a well-paying job and be on the path to having that as their backbone into their reentry.
Yep. It, all of those things are very, very important, but you can't.
Very cool. I mean, so a lot of underdogs who listen to this, even if they haven't necessarily been previously incarcerated or part of the military, a lot of folks can relate to a feeling of transition.
Oh, yeah.
And like, man, feeling like they're starting over again.
And not knowing.
What are like two or three things that you see work for folks who come in your program that like folks can relate to in terms of like that help them with a transition to starting over?
Right. So this is, and I'm going to use an example that just actually happened this last week. So we have a young woman who has started, and she's nervous about starting in construction and being on a construction site because she's never been there. And what does it look like? And how is this going to go? And all of those things. So she got very anxious. So I partnered her. I reached out to one of our other graduates who's already, you know, passed the first class. She's in work phase number one, and asked her if I could connect the two. So they're connecting. And so one can relate to the other because they come from similar neighborhoods, similar backgrounds. And they can relate more than I could relate because my background is very, very different. So that is community and connecting them together so that they can kind of help each other along the whole path. Yeah.
Very cool. And it's one of the things that we believe in here too on the Gregory Neesmith Show is there's the old African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. but if you want to go far, go together.
Right.
And what you're talking about is one of the keys to transition, no matter what your past is oftentimes having a community and support around you to have your things work out.
Yeah.
With that, we're amazingly coming up on the close of the show. It's time flies. I think we have a caller. There's a person outside waiting to come in. Like, it's all happening. And I wish and want more time. With that, though, can you please let folks know how they can support CMC Workforce? Because you're an underdog advocate. You're out here doing stuff for underdogs, and I want to make sure that folks know how to support you, and both in ways that if they don't live in New York City,
sure,
and then at least one way they can support you if they are in the New York City area.
So whether you live in New York City or you don't, you can always go to our website, which is cmcworkforce.com, and there's a little button on the top that you could donate. Your sponsorship will go directly towards our class. Our initial ICT training class is the first tier. We would appreciate any and all donations. And I just refreshed it this morning. So we're all ready and set for people. If you're in New York City, want to get involved, we're always looking for board members, community members who want to become friends, help on a committee. We have all kinds of different ways that people can help. So feel free to reach out to me either through our website. All of those emails come to me, or our Facebook page.
And we appreciate what you do. And for those who are listening to this on the podcast, we will put a link to the website for those who want to support and contribute. It'll be in the description of the podcast. We didn't say this, though, but if people want to get in touch with you, what if they want more Vivian?
Oh, if they want more me, huh? They can reach out to me through the Facebook page. That would be the best way that comes directly to me.
Sounds good. Okay. I appreciate you for coming through.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, anytime, and you are welcome back. With that, I just want to open up the phone lines real quick. Name where you're calling from.
Yeah, James.
Hey, James.
From Harlem.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. We're back, and unfortunately, I'm about to, like, have to close the show.
I know.
Can you give me one line, though?
Yes. Don't worry. I'm in time. I just wanted to know that you have listeners out here.
Hey.
And congratulations to the young lady. Good luck.
Thank you.
James, I appreciate you, and we'll have more time for you. I'll be back next week, and thank you.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
All right, now, have a good week, and we'll talk next week.
You too. Be blessed.
All right, now, and that was James. With that, I just want to say a quick thank you to everyone who makes the show possible, and that's you, the listeners, the callers, James, Deborah. Appreciate you, the folks who chimed in on the Facebook Live, and also thank you to Megan and Kayla, who are the producers and editors that make me look good and sound good. Makes me look like I may know what I'm doing. I try my best here. With that said, if you want to listen to the podcast, it'll be out tomorrow on Monday at gregoryneesmith.com or iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, all those good things. And also go to gregoryneesmith.com and sign up for my newsletter so you can see what's going on during the week when we're not on the air. And with that, I leave you with my favorite quote. Even though I've been off for 2 months, the favorite quote, it ain't going nowhere. We're going to end the show like we always do. And that's underdogs. Can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.